Start making plans now to join us for the paranormal event of 2007.
The Halloween Spooktacular, October 27th, at the Haunted Lincoln Theater in Decatur, Illinois.
Hosted by Troy Taylor, author of 50 of the best-known books on haunted history, not to mention the Ghost Hunter's Guidebook.
Meet the rock and roll ghost hunter Keith Dage from Sci-Fi Channel Spooked, and Del Kazmarek, president of the renowned Ghost Research Society.
Join in the discussion with Rosemary Ellen Guiley and psychic detective Ken Berg.
Meet Becky Ray and Laura Moon, host of Darker Side of the Moon Radio. And, of course, there's us.
The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter, live from the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
If that's not enough, folks, there's a free tour of the Greenwood Cemetery and big screen viewing of the 1932 classic movie, The Old Dark House.
There's even a haunted Decatur tour and a late-night hunt of the Lincoln Theater itself, sold on a first-come, first-served basis.
Seating is limited, folks. Make reservations now at www.prairieghost.com/halloween.html or by calling 888-446-7859. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express accepted.
It's not just spooky.
It's spooktacular.
This is an emergency broadcast.
In Search of Paranormal Radio Show, hosted by Tommy Golden, sponsored by the Tennessee Ghost Chasers. In Search of Paranormal Radio Show talks about all things on the dark side of paranormal. So tune in live on Thursdays and Fridays from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. Central Time Zone.
Hey, Scott O. I just want to thank you for this sweet Go Sleep Talk t-shirt, man. When I put it on, women just start coming at me from all directions.
Well, no problem, dude.
Oh, yeah, and check this out. I had this rash on my chest for like 3 months, right? The first time I wore this Go Sleep Talk t-shirt for the day, I took it off before bed and the rash was gone.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I also worked at a job interview I had last week, and not only did I get the job, but the boss liked it so much, he made me his partner.
Huh?
Yeah, and I'm now a millionaire because of your Ghostly Talk t-shirts.
Well, you know, we not only have new t-shirts for 2007, but Ghostly Talk also has a brand new line of bumper stickers and 1 1/4-inch buttons.
You're kidding!
No, sir. You can check them out and also find out how to order them at ghostlytalk.com.
I must go and order all of them now!
Whoa, hold on. Save some for the rest of the listeners. As you can see, Ghostly Talk swag is going fast, so head on over to ghostlytalk.com and check it out. T-shirts, bumper stickers, and 1 1/4-inch buttons, all for a very cheap price. Order yours today.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts, Doug and Scott O.
Is it that time?
I think it's going to be for tonight, yeah.
I think it's that time.
I think we had to warn our guest coming up about it, and he was cool with it, thank goodness. So I think we will do this first installment of these giveaways. We'll try this and see how it works.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, let's give it a go.
So,
first of all, everyone call in.
Yeah, you're going to need to call in. You cannot get this ticket any other way. You're going to have to call in and be the first person to raise your hand, so to say, in our conference here we have going.
605-47, when asked, dial 555-1081, followed by the pound sign.
It's on the Ghostly Talk site, however you can get there. Again, 605-475-8590, type in conference number 555-1081, followed by the pound sign, like Bonnie said. Here's the question.
Dun, dun, dun.
I can't wait to hear the question.
Tick tock or something behind me. I don't know how to do this.
I think that's actually copyright.
All right, here we go. Yeah, I know we'll get sued. We're gonna get sued, guys. All right, here's the question. This should be fairly easy, but it may not be that easy. Maybe
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, here we go. When was the first Ouija board invented? I want a year, just a year. Okay, when was the first Ouija board invented? I need just the year. That's all you need to give us. So first person to call in, the prize is yours. One free pass to the Mid-South Paranormal Convention coming up September, the weekend of September. God, I forgot the weekend now. I'm totally blanking out. I have it right here, though, just so you guys know. Because somebody might not want them because it's like, you know, they might have...
Oh, what if they have a...
Yeah, weekend of September 21st through September 23rd of this year. The Mid-South Paranormal Convention.
In Louisville, Kentucky.
Beautiful Louisville, Kentucky. When was the first Ouija board invented? I just want the year. Just give me the year. You have to. But that's what we need. Yeah, I know.
So that we know who's first or whatever.
So whenever you want to call, whenever you want to call in for that, we're going to leave it open up. I'm going to keep an eye on this thing, our operators are going to keep an eye on this thing. Whoever calls in gets the first, they claim the prize, they win. It's that simple.
Sounds cool.
So without further ado, Doug.
Excellent. Dr. Jim Horan is an author, media personality, and 15-year veteran in the field of applied psychological research and assessment, including online testing. His award-winning work has led to more than 100 journal publications and has been profiled by a myriad of media outlets and programs, including the Discovery Channel, A&E, BBC, NBC's The Today Show, Wilson Quarterly, USA Today, News Scientist, Psychology Today, and The Rolling Stone. His website is www.2020skills.com. We would like to welcome, definitely like to welcome, Dr. Jim Horan to Ghostly Talk.
Welcome, Dr. Jim.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Real, real good. It's good to have you back on the show. I know we had you on a while back, and we had a good time, and it's good to... you know what? You were one of them guests we've had that somebody suggested to us. I have to be honest. They're like, hey, you should check this gentleman out. He's really cool. And it's one of those ones where we're glad we followed that up, because we had a great time with you on last time, and we just wanted to have you come back on and talk to you about some more stuff, I guess. I mean, there was a certain case that you actually sent me over these notes this week. You're like, here, check out these notes on this particular case, review this, and we'll talk about it on the air. Fortunately, I had a few minutes to go through these, and I want to talk to you about this particular case that we discussed it before the show a little bit too. This particular case that you were talking about. Do you want to elaborate on that? Do we want to start with that tonight?
Sure, that's fine. I mean, I guess I should preface all of this by saying that I'm known as somewhat of a skeptic when it comes to paranormal.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean though that I don't have sympathetic leanings. I most certainly do. I've published many papers that talk about, from my perspective, the reality of psi as far as extrasensory perception goes. And I think some forms of psychokinesis have validity as well. But that belief comes from looking at scientific evidence. It's not something that I just automatically believed in, and then I don't try to, you know, look for evidence that either tries to contradict it or support it. I'm a data-driven person. I go where the evidence leads me. And so I tend to be skeptical because when I've applied various types of research designs to all manners of apparitions, haunt phenomena, poltergeist-like phenomena, I tend to find that psychology and traditional physics goes a long way in explaining most of the features that we see. However, that doesn't mean that I'm here to be dogmatic and say that there's nothing more to those. I would not still be in this business if I was satisfied with the answers that I've received so far. I think we have a long way to go, and that's why I'm still interested in this, as long as we keep pushing the envelope on what research is and how we're applying new methodologies and technologies of understanding these phenomena. So I'm an armchair critic, and this study is an example of that. About 2 years ago, I had the pleasure of being a mentor, a supervisor to a project that two students received funding for from the Society of Scientific Exploration. And anyone can go to their site. It's just Society for Scientific Exploration. And it's a great program they have. It's called the Young Investigators Program. And the two individuals, they're wonderful people. They are very well read in psychical research and general parapsychology. They were interested in doing an actual field study, but we didn't want to keep doing more of the same. You know, I get very frustrated with parapsychology in particular because the funding for good research is not there for people that like the interest that I do. In other words, haunting, poltergeist, survival-related stuff.
Yeah.
Most of the money, the limited money that's out there, goes for laboratory research. So even within the confines of my own community, I'm somewhat of an outcast. However, the Society for Scientific Exploration certainly recognized the talent these two individuals had, wanted to plant that seed and nurture it, so they funded a very nice field study. But this field study was different than what had been done in the past. This time, we wanted to look at a haunt case where the investigators, the people coming in taking environmental measurements and photographs, were blind, meaning they didn't know they were in a haunted house. And we wanted them to also visit what we would call a control house.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a structure that was in the same geological area, that had the same physical characteristics, generally speaking. And we wanted them to take the same kinds of measurements and go through the same protocol as they did in the target house or the haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
But the people wouldn't know which is which.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time, actually, this has ever been done. It sounds incredibly obvious,
right,
but it's the first time someone's actually done a systematic study of an alleged haunting.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I mentioned to you on the break, we have somebody calling in for this ticket.
Cool. Yeah, let's
bring him on here. Sorry about that. Hang on for 1 second. Okay, listener from 336 area code, we're going to bring you on here.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, who are we speaking to?
This is New Life from your chat room.
Well, hi there.
Beth from North Carolina.
Well, hi there.
Hey.
We asked the question. I hope you're calling in for this. Please tell me you're calling in for this.
Yes.
if you're wrong, we're going to have to slaughter you on the air. You are aware of this, right?
I'll take it, but I'm hoping I'm right. I think it was in the 1890s, maybe 1891.
What do you think?
It was actually 1890.
Congratulations. What was your name again?
Beth.
Beth.
But I'm on your forum new wife. As new wife, yeah.
Oh, okay, great. All right, well, I'll tell you what we're... This is how we're going to do this, okay? We have our ultra-secret operator people. They have this number that you called at, right? Can we call you back at this number? Is that okay?
Yes, but okay. Only if I get to ask you a question first.
What's the question?
Okay. I have been asking you and asking you and asking you to get you to answer this question.
Okay.
I want you guys to come up with a ringtone.
Oh, you know what? We have to work on that. I actually have received the emails and the smoke signals. I think you actually hired a stalker on that, too,
yes,
didn't you?
Okay. I'm responsible for the smoke signals, so no. That was me.
You know what? We're going to work on that. I know that's something that Doug and I have actually, we've talked about that as a result of the emails you've sent in, Beth. Okay?
Yes,
we
have.
So we're definitely going to look into that for you.
I've said my piece. Good.
Okay, we have the number to call. This, the only way we can do this is if we call you back, okay, Beth? Because we don't have like a team of operators.
We're sort of doing the show. Yeah.
We're lying about the operator thing. In case you didn't know, we're completely lying about that part, right? We don't have operators. We have me and Doug and Bonnie. So what we're going to do is we're going to call you immediately after the show tonight, and we're going to get the information we need from you so we can get you that free ticket, okay?
Sounds fantastic.
Beth, excellent. Thanks for calling in, okay?
Okay, guys.
Have a great night. Bye. Thanks. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Bye, Beth.
Bye.
Bye.
Poor Dr. Horan.
I know.
No. That's quite all right. I'm glad you have an active listening community. That's great.
Well, we appreciate you. We told, I don't want to kill any more of the momentum here, but I told Dr. Horan when we were on break.
So we
came back.
So we knew
Horan, I'm warning you, somebody's going to call in here and totally interrupt you in the middle of this, okay? And he was very cool with that, so thanks again, Dr. Horan. Let's take it out.
My pleasure.
Thank you again. Let's take it from where we were at, though. Now, before we do get started, I know I did read the article, and I thought that was very interesting. You had actually, you guys were lucky enough to have two houses that were actually next door to each other. Am I correct?
Yes, and it was very difficult to arrange. We first had to find a house that was willing to let us come in and take over for about 3 days. And not only take over in the sense of bringing in equipment and taking measurements, but there was a second part of the study. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, and I'll explain why in a minute. But we were also going to be bringing in large groups of just participants, people that had an interest in paranormal phenomena, and they're interested in taking part in some research. And what you do is you walk people that don't have any knowledge of the location. And remember, we chose a private residence, so this is not a place that has a history or it's been publicized as being haunting. This isn't a restaurant that's been on, you know, the Discovery Channel. It's been widely publicized. So no one knew what types of phenomena were reported here, mm-hmm. let alone where in the establishment they were reported. Mm-hmm. So we were going to bring in a bunch of participants, have them tour around, get certain psychological measures, have them take a test for ESP as well, and have them mark down the kinds of experiences, if any, that they've had and where. And that didn't happen, unfortunately, because during the study, we were able to take all the environmental measurements,
mm-hmm.
Things like lighting levels, carbon monoxide levels, electromagnetic fields, looking at also contextual variables. In other words, looking at all parts of the house and seeing if certain colors, number of windows, number of mirrors, that those things may have correlated with where experiences have happened. And unfortunately, the family that allowed us to come in, there was a husband and a wife. There were mm-hmm. no children. And both of these people were professionals. They were both actually mental health professionals.
That's what I found and so crazy about this, Dr. Horan, was just that. I was reading through this thing that you sent over, and that was the thing that stuck out. These people are actually mental health professionals. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you out, but I had to mention that. That's a real weird story.
That is a very important point. Mm-hmm. These are highly educated and experienced people. They're used to working with people that hear things or see things. The lady, in particular, very strong into some aspects of metaphysics, and she was very much in support of this tapping. The husband apparently was a skeptic. Mm-hmm. I've learned since that that's probably not the case. He actually probably was scared out of his mind. All these barriers, saying that, oh, this is bullshit, this is not, you know, not real, thinking, just basically telling himself what he wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
They had not had anything bad happen there, but the weeks leading up to the study, because this took a good 6 to 8 months just to get it planned
mm-hmm.
and orchestrated. A few days before we were set to arrive, the woman started having unsettling dreams, and so did the husband, although those two didn't talk about that. So they started raising doubts in themselves without them each realizing it before the study happened. The man in particular started getting very agitated, very irritable. They let us come in, take the environmental measurements one day. That was great. The next day, we were bringing all the research participants in. And this is a huge undertaking. It takes a long amount of time just to do all this in a meticulous, structured fashion.
Oh, yeah.
And when we had all the people there, it started going well. But then all of a sudden, he comes out screaming at me that, wait a minute, what do you mean I can't go into my home? And what he was referring to is the fact that part of the setup was letting them both know that while we're bringing people into the house, they couldn't be present. We didn't want anyone there to give them subtle clues or any kind of cues, just for control fashion.
Yeah,
and
I mean, that's...
he built up rapport.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
No, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
That's,
I mean,
that's what I would have expected.
I would have expected that. I wouldn't get hot under the collar about something like that.
Right, I would have expected
Okay,
I'm giving up my home in for scientific research, so I'm going to, you know, go to the, you know, the some great place with a pool or something for the weekend.
The weekend off, yeah. I'm going on vacation.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be like, woohoo, you know, I'm out of here.
Well, actually, yeah, you're closer to the truth than you think. I mean, they're actually on the back patio, literally that, with their feet up having a Corona. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
We had built up a rapport where they knew they could trust me. I wasn't going to come in there and bring some hooligans and we were going to, you know, strip their house of everything.
Right.
So he comes out, and in front of all of these research participants, some who I knew, some I didn't, started literally using profanity at the top of his lungs, telling us to leave and to get out, that this wasn't going to happen. And so, of course, obviously we did. I think we handled the whole situation rather well. It was an unfortunate but actually a good experience for those two young researchers to go through, because I don't need to tell you that when you're dealing with these kind of phenomena, whether they are real or imagined, whatever the origin of them, they have a dramatic effect on people.
It is true.
And that effect can make people lose control. They already feel out of control because they feel they're dealing with forces that they can't control, they don't understand, they can't master. And when you add on top of that, you know, people coming in and trying to, what looks like, help you, but then take over your life, that can be all very unsettling. I thought we did a good job, though, building it up, but I guess it wasn't good enough. After a few days, letting the situation calm down, I talked to the woman. And she said that the husband had calmed down. In fact, he said he didn't remember anything that he did.
Wow.
He doesn't remember any of the conversation.
Don't you find that a little bit paranormal in and of itself?
Well, yeah,
I do.
Paranormal, no. But I think what happened, I mean, I've learned several things about this individual since then. Even though he was a mental health professional, he was under a high level of stress at the time in his job. He was battling alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had some very bad experiences right before we did the study.
Mm-hmm.
The day before we came in with the equipment, the dreams started happening more frequently. They got more tense,
mm-hmm.
Also intense, and they felt as if they needed to pull the plug on the study. They felt as if the spirits in their house were telling them they did not want this to happen, and out of politeness, they felt they couldn't just stop the proceedings ahead of time. So they went with them as far as they could. But then they freaked out, or at least this man did.
I want to go on pause.
I
want to go on pause for just a moment, because this is fascinating. This little hook or twist or whatever is just exactly...
Oh, I read this, and I was like, my goodness.
Exactly my kind
here.
Of thing.
Yeah.
Dr. Horan, if your explanation... Let me try and give you your explanation real quick. The stress at work, the battling
alcoholism,
you know, so the substance abuse, all this stuff, gets in this guy's head, and then there's this thing that's going to disrupt his home life for 3 days, and he had to be convinced to begin with, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's like, okay, this can happen, and then, so all this stuff built up to where he himself, his own subconscious, was basically screaming, you know, no, this is too much, so bad dreams, et cetera, et cetera. And then he goes into this little tirade kind of thing, this fit, to get rid of you guys, and therefore, in his mind, problem solved, right? Yet, you did allude to the spirits in their home. We're sending them this stuff, right? So that's the other side of the coin. There's actually two sides of the coin here, because I know people who would say, oh, yeah, you're going to disrupt a home. And one of the things that I've seen over and over and over again is when you remodel a home,
mm-hmm.
something's gonna, it either takes a ghost and goes insane, like, wow, oh my God, all this stuff is happening, I'm going to just tear it up with all my phenomena, or it does the opposite, it tones it down for quite a while. And so I know that remodeling a home does that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, you're just disrupting a home with an experiment, mm-hmm. right? But a similar kind of thing, you're disrupting a family life.
You're killing the norm.
So I would say that the disruption could be that any spirits in the home would, you know, either act up or go away, one or the other.
That's certainly, I guess, possible. We talked about in the paper of this possibility that what this man was going through at the time when he was in his tirade is what clinical psychologists or psychiatrists would call a dissociative episode,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, people that get unusually upset, like road rage, where people act and do things uninhibited that normally they wouldn't do, and then for some reason they don't recall the details. You know, people would say they kind of black out. I don't remember hitting that person. I don't remember doing that, screaming that. I find it hard to believe that he was completely unaware of what was going on, because when he was talking to me, I was actually interacting with him, and he answered my questions. Okay, it's not like he was so focused that he was only spurting out, not taking anything in. He was taking stuff in.
He was conscious.
And remember, I have a background in clinical psychology. I worked in mental health and wellness for over 7 years at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. I was an instructor of clinical psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
I had to teach medical students and residents how you do diagnostic interviewing, how you deal with mental health people in the community and in their homes. So I'm also a mental health professional, and that's one of the reasons why I was there close by. I've seen things like this happen before, but not to this extent. When I was doing the study with Dr. Richard Wiseman in Edinburgh, they did the underground vault.
The famous underground vault.
It was a huge thing in 2001.
Yes, it
was. I remember one of the participants was in one of these, you know, vaults and would not leave. We were bringing different groups of people in, rotating them. This one lady was just transfixed. She would not leave. They couldn't get her to leave. So I actually had to go in there and kind of talk her out of the vault. Now, she didn't have a negative experience. It was sort of the opposite. She was having somewhat of a, just, I don't want to say like rapture, but she was so in awe of what she was experiencing, she didn't want to leave. She was transfixed. Almost like a hypnotic kind of trance you have to guide somebody out of.
Yeah.
I've had these very intense experiences before, but not to this level. But I call this clinical parapsychology, and it brings home a strong point. When you have investigators, whether they're professional or amateur, they're going in people's homes. Already, even under the best of circumstances, they're already upsetting or disrupting the routine of people.
Always
need to have in mind that you're dealing with human beings, and usually you're there at a site because they want you there, usually. They want to get some sort of explanation as to what's happening in their lives. They're trusting you to help provide an answer, or at least maybe part of an answer. And so we always have to keep in mind that the first and foremost reason while we're usually in investigation is to help people, not make things worse, like a doctor would. So I think that's an important part of the whole paper, is that these things can happen even under the best of circumstances, even with what I think is meticulous planning.
Mm-hmm.
And part of any investigation when you're planning, okay, whether there are people involved or not, in the sense of maybe you just have your own research team, this can happen to team members too. I've had this happen to team members. Anybody, I think, is susceptible to this under the right circumstances. We all really don't know our comfort levels, I don't think, that well. We think we do. Richard Wiseman, when we were doing the Edinburgh study, refused to go down inside the vaults. Why? He said he was too scared. So there's a point, I think, that even professionals, experienced investigators, can get in situations that they think that they're mentally prepared for, but they're not. And so I guess the main point of this study, besides bringing up some new methodologies, and that is looking at control sites, not just sites that have histories of haunting, but trying to see what's really different between those sites. What's different about people that experience phenomena versus don't? The other aspect of all that is plan very well for everybody's well-being, the people in your team and the people that you're interacting with. Because at some point, something like this that I just described will happen, and if you're not prepared, you can make things worse. And that's not good, obviously, for the people in the short term, but it's not good for the field in the long term.
No, it isn't.
And you're absolutely right. Those are very wise words.
I got a couple ideas on this also as far as this gentleman's outburst, but I want
to
do it after the break.
We're
going
to have to do it after the break.
Yeah. We're going
to
take a quick break, Jim. Just hang tight, okay? I do have some ideas. I have some ideas on this also I want to elaborate on.
And while we're on break, www.2020skills, SKILLS.com.
Well, can we talk a little bit about your website, too, Dr. Horan?
Sure, because that's going to confuse people. You want to do that after the break?
We'll do that after the break, for sure. Let's do that. We'll be right back.
Do that.
Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? These are just a few of the questions explored each week by naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant, Dr. Rita Louise on Just Energy Radio. Explore your possibilities every Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join us at JustEnergyRadio.com.
experience the charm and mystery of the Deet Sound through ghost stories by attending the highly respected Roswell Ghost Tour. Your experienced guide will lead you on this two-hour outdoor walking tour through the historic district of Roswell. One of the highlights of the tour is a visit to Founders Cemetery, the burial site of Roswell King, where bodies are buried beneath modern streets and houses. Grand Greek Revival mansions and humble mill workers' apartments are some of the haunted sites you'll see on this mile of easy walking. Check RoswellGhostTour.com for the current schedule. Tours run most Friday and Saturday nights year-round, and private tours may be arranged. Reservations are required. Call 770-649-9922. That's 770-649-9922 for more information. Happy haunting from Roswell Ghost Tours.
Fun continues. We almost didn't make it back.
You know, we were getting
you guys can't get rid of me that easy.
The PA system did not falter.
Well, before we go any further, we do have to mention this. There's been this gentleman hanging around the studio tonight named Mike. We'll just name him Mike. Is that good enough?
Can we change it though? I don't really like that name.
What do you want to call him?
Yeah, that was the the divorce. It was a Mike.
Oh, okay. So let's call him. What do we want to call him?
Bob. We're call
okay,
him
we
Bob
got Bob
for the
now.
Sake of this.
Yeah. Bob's in the studio. We have a gentleman named Bob who's a college student actually tonight.
Yeah.
Who emailed us. Jim, just give us one. We gotta mention this. This is really cool. Bob contacted us a couple weeks ago and said, "Hey, I'm doing a project for school. I'm a graduate student at a very illustrious college here in Michigan, and I was wondering if I could interview you guys and come and take some pictures of you guys in the studio while you're doing your thing," which, of course, we were very happy to do. And he's hanging out right now, so he's been kind of hanging out, just listening to the show. He's been on the headphones, and you having fun?
I am having fun.
Good.
Now that we've renamed him.
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
Bob.
He also has actual video footage. He was taking video of us doing the show.
Which is frightening.
And yeah, see, never happened before, has it?
We've always kept the mystery of the studio here. I guess we're breaking out now.
Other than, like, at conferences and stuff.
Right, which
not
of course
not during an actual show, no.
Right.
We don't
so
really.
This
we,
is something.
So I hope you're enjoying yourself, Bob.
Thank you.
Before we go any further, Dr. Horan.
The website we've been giving out.
Yeah.
We've been giving out the one that you do for human resources. Oops.
well, you don't have it.
I have a real life, yes. Yes, and that's fine. People can look at that. There's some interesting papers that talk about the kind of mathematics that I use, not only in mainstream psych, but also parapsych. But my main business, the main research organization that I do all my parapsychology through and other research, is known as Integrated Knowledge Systems. We're actually redoing the website right now. But if people want to read more about my interests, my own research, as well as my collaborations with other people, both pro and con with respect to the paranormal, they can just go to Amazon.com under the author drop-down menu, type in James Horan. And they'll see a couple of different edited books. These are textbooks. These are academic books now.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to be somewhat heavy reading at times, but they're fascinating reading. If you want to know what science, and from all different angles, all different disciplines, what they know about these phenomena so far, get those books. They
definitely
will educate you in a way that you can't get from other kinds of like websites or just by looking at any type of journal. This is a gold mine of information in one place on what people need to know to have as a background before they do investigations.
And this is terrible timing, too, because my brother just left his position as a professor at, or not a professor, but a, I don't know what he was. But anyway, he taught classes at Michigan State University,
mm-hmm.
and he moved to Texas. And he So now he can't get, like, sample copies from the publisher. So I gotta actually, I actually have to go and buy these books. So James Huran, H-O-U-R-A-N, at Amazon.com in the author search.
Check him out. Now, I wanted to mention, before we went to break, we were talking about this particular investigation you guys were working on and how this gentleman just blew his top.
Mm-hmm. And kicked everyone out.
Kicked everybody out of the house, right? One thing I want to comment on, and I think Doug and Bonnie have seen this out of me, and I'm talking about myself. That's why I may be able to identify with this gentleman a little bit. I will not. I won't say that I've ever blacked out and went into some uncontrollable anger or rage, whatever you want to call it, where I didn't remember what was going on. But there have been times where I've agreed to do things, right? You guys have seen this before,
mm-hmm.
where I've agreed to do things, especially at my house, right, where I'm like, yeah, everybody come over. Everybody come over. Everybody come over. It's going to be the party of the century. It's going to be totally awesome, right? So we get about 30 or 40 people here in the little haunted winery. And after about an hour of that, sometimes I've noticed that I get uptight.
Mm-hmm.
I get real uptight. It is my obsessive. I think it's a bit of an obsessive compulsive on my part. But I do get uptight, and I start getting uncomfortable. I start getting irritable. I start getting cranky, especially when my parents come. They like to mess with everything, right? My parents come here and start tearing the place up. Because they can, and they want to get me back from all the years of heartache I put on them when I was living in their house. But I've noticed the same behavior out of myself where I've never went like, everybody, get out. I hate all you. Go away. I don't want to talk to you ever again. But I've noticed that I've gotten uptight, though, and stressed out in some way. So I'm wondering if this gentleman agreed to this, maybe not. I don't know, it seems like you guys were pretty straightforward with him, Dr. Huran, about what you were going to do and all the things that you had planned with this experiment.
But then when it actually happened, he had something else in mind.
Maybe,
you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I've run into situations like that, too.
Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Dr. Huran?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I don't mean to compare you guys to rodents, but we've known this in psychology.
I do it all the time.
Rats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You put rats in a small amount of space and slowly turn up, for example, the temperature, they get more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are some innate things like that, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, when you tell somebody about an investigation, it may sound more romantic than it really is in life. But, yes, he could have something in mind, and then when it happens, it's maybe a little bit more overwhelming than he thought.
Yeah.
But he also was fine, though. He seemed to be perfectly fine when we were doing all the instrumentation, which I felt was actually more intrusive because we were going through every inch of the house, taking measurements, not always explaining what we were doing at the time. They weren't inside. It was much more of an intrusive process. He didn't seem to get upset about that, but it was the people. So who knows? There's probably many things happening at once here, and they just kind of all converged, and he was at a snapping point. But again, you know, for the investigators out there, keep this in mind, and not only in people that you're going to their homes, but your own team members. This will happen,
mm-hmm.
so you better be prepared or have somebody with you that knows how to deal with these situations, because you can make it worse for everybody very, very fast.
Oh, yeah.
And ghost hunters in general have there's certain rules, like if you're ill,
mm-hmm.
don't go ghost hunting. Stay home. But they usually that's like, you know, then you're more susceptible
to
being possessed and things like that. So So I think we have probably some good rules with perhaps medicine, you know, early medicines, you know, oh yeah, that works, but we don't know why or how or mm-hmm. why, you know. So we probably have some good rules that people need to follow, but they have.
I have no doubt in my mind that Dr. Huran and his team were absolutely, I know for a fact that they were the utmost respectful in this
home. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was no
issue
with that.
And you did what you needed to do, which
exactly.
was clear out. Were you ever invited back, or did you find a suitable second location?
Oh, no. We at least were able to finish all the instrumentation work, both there and at the control site. So to me, the more important part was already done.
Mm.
We collected hard environmental data. And, you know, contrary to what some other things have been in the literature, we actually had some new findings in that realm, too. For example, it's very popular, very trendy in parapsychology to talk about the role of electromagnetic fields. And
mm-hmm.
usually, though, ghost hunters and parapsychologists differ on the relationship between those two things, electromagnetic fields and the experience of ghosts. Some people believe, for example, that ghosts are made up of some sort of electromagnetic radiation, and so it's natural because a ghost is electromagnetic radiation. So that's why we're having ghost experiences. Parapsychologists have a different view. They see the direction going the opposite way, and that is electromagnetic fields screw up the physiology in your temporal lobe, causing all sorts of experiences that people therefore interpret as ghostly but aren't. Okay. That's a very trendy explanation. It has been for probably the past 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually losing steam right now. There's a lot of criticism over electromagnetic fields because they tend to correlate with everything. And you also see these experiences at places where, one, there are no electromagnetic fields that are of any consequence, or the fluctuations aren't, or the type of people that would be theoretically most susceptible to the effects, they're not the people having the experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So electromagnetic fields, while they might be a role in some cases, they weren't a role in this case, and probably aren't other ones. What we did find that was interesting was that carbon monoxide levels did show a correlation with where unusual experiences were being reported. Now that tended to replicate something that I found in Kentucky, of all places. I don't know if you all saw one of the last episodes on National Geographic Channel called Is It Real? It was an episode on ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
I was in that documentary, and I was supposed to be doing an investigation of Bob Mackie's Music World.
Oh, you ever heard of that case?
So I was the guy that came in to do the study, and we also found very high levels of carbon monoxide at key parts of the establishment. And if anyone has ever been to Bob Mackie's Music World, you know that the place has horrible, you know, environmental conditions. Now, that adds to the, you know, honky-tonk mystique, but as far as health conditions go, I can see why people report some things.
Mm-hmm.
So electromagnetic fields are losing steam, it seems, somewhat, and it's important that when we look at cases, that we're always broadening the variables that we're trying to see might have an impact. In other words, keep an open mind. Don't think that we just need to be measuring or looking at one thing. And this is what has really frustrated me about the field. I see this with amateurs and professionals alike, and that is they keep regurgitating the same thing. They keep doing the same research design. They're not pushing themselves. They're not testing new hypotheses. They're not learning anything new. And to me, that is what makes the field uninteresting. And I think that's why it's not getting a lot of funding, because nothing innovative is happening. Nothing innovative has happened probably for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
You're right. There
was a lot of good research. There was a spurt of research between 15, you know, 10 years ago, but that is plateaued. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about the study that we published, not because that I was involved, because these two students, you know, they wanted to do something new. The interest is there, and I hope I can, you know, inspire other people to do stuff that's innovative. Don't simply do what's routine or comfortable to you. You'll never learn that way.
Well, I think what happens with a lot of people is they get a certain idea in their head. They get their own theory, their own hypothesis, and they find a means of trying to act that out or execute it, and they don't get any results. And I think what a lot of people are doing is they just keep doing the same thing over and over again, hoping to get results from that, right? So they can kind of put their trademark, like, this is what I did, and this is what I got from that. I think what a lot of people, they get stuck in that rut where they just keep doing the same thing over and over again, hoping they'll get some results from that sooner or later. I don't know if that's...
I completely agree.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like... I mean, I think that's what I'm doing.
Well, what I remembered, Dr. Han, is when you were talking about the EMF detectors and things like that,
mm-hmm.
is I remember one of the very first things we did when we went to Ohio State Reformatory,
mm-hmm.
we attended a little seminar by Dr. Ken. And he brought an EMF detector out,
yeah.
right?
Oh, man.
And he goes, do you have a soul or a spirit? And we're all like, well, we hope so, yeah. And so he turns it on and he points it right at somebody in the audience.
Yeah.
He goes, you're not making it go off.
Did you
bring your soul or your spirit? Is
yeah.
it with you right now? I mean, because you're not making this EMF meter go off right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't see why that would, you know, why an EMF reading would be a ghost, because, you know, you obviously have
mm-hmm.
a soul or a spirit, and you're not making it go off. And
yeah.
So what, you know, why would a ghost
yeah,
make
I
it go
that.
Off?
And that's they a don't fun even demonstration. Have
Yeah. So.
However, I would even tell Dr. Ken to expand his own thinking, because there's a difference. Assuming that there are souls, assuming that they can be separated from your body and have some sort of consciousness and stay inhabited at a place, and that's what you're experiencing. Well, a soul inside a body may not exhibit the same kind, level, or other kind of pattern of EMFs as one that's not bounded by a body.
Right.
See, this is the kind of thinking that scientists, you know, we're okay with saying, I don't know, because we just want an answer. I don't know. So I think people need to keep telling themselves, look, okay, this hypothesis, it might be right, but in what way could it be wrong? And how can I test in a way that will tell me, is this happening or is this happening? When people go into an investigation without a research question in mind, I think it's fruitless. I think it's a waste of time. They should be there trying to study a hypothesis or answer one or more questions. Sometimes it's okay to go into an investigation just to observe certain things, but what you're observing and how, that should also be dictated by theory. That's why it takes so long to do good work, because you're always refining your theories, refining your methods to test those theories, and refining ways to test new theories. So it's a very painstaking, boring process. It's not the romantic sitting alone with a candle and some Chianti in a romantic castle. That doesn't happen except in the movie.
Right.
Yeah. You know you're doing good research when you're bored out of your mind.
We do lots of research.
Yeah, we do a lot of that.
Yeah, you
actually
just met the super team then, Dr. Ryan.
Oh, you're just, okay, great. I should expect good stuff from you guys then.
Thank God we all like each other.
We're losing our minds over here.
And yeah. How many hours have we spent?
God has almost died 100 times on investigations, I have to tell you that.
We have sat, how many hours did we sit outside of the workshop or whatever at in West Virginia, and that bird was going insane.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah, we sat there for a very
long
time.
Jonathan kept
going,
"I got an orb," and everyone's like, "Hooray!"
Yeah,
it was hours. We sat there.
Yeah, and that's
for nothing. I mean,
and really, that's what it comes down to. I think, and Dr. Horan, I think it's why a lot of people. You mentioned it already, and we'll mention it again. I mean, yeah, it isn't this romantic idea where you light a candle and you start to meditate and drool on yourself, and then ghosts come or tables start to tip or whatever it may be. It isn't that romantic image. I wish it was. I really wish it was, but it isn't. I mean, it's usually a lot of sitting and refining your ideas, like you said, Dr. Horan.
Exactly.
There was.
And I hope that's the point people go away with. You know.
There was some kind of, it was a conference or I don't know what the heck it was, but it was in, I don't remember exactly where, but it was in 1960, I think, and everybody went, and it was about, you know, it was parapsychologists, and it was researchers, and they wrote the book, Trait de Parapsychology or something like that, and which was the report of that conference. And this conference was the big stuff. The book starts at the beginning with Mesmer, right? And it goes on from there, and it goes through, obviously mesmerism, and then hypnotism, and then ghost phenomena, and then ESP, and then psychokinesis and all of these, Dee Dee Holm and all these, Hume and all these fascinating things from the past, right? And evidently they all just like lock themselves. I just have this picture in my head where they all lock themselves in this huge like conference room, and they all talked about all this stuff for probably a week.
Yeah.
And you know, in order to get all these notes, I mean, this book is pretty heady.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm wondering is, do they have any of these anymore, or are they more like these conferences that we go to where people show some of the stuff that they've gotten and some and we talk about the theories that they have, but we don't really dig in like this book? I'm wondering, was 1960 the end of the really, really tough, hard scientific research?
No, not at all. There are training days and, in fact, entire weekends of training work through the Society for Psychical Research in London. You have to be a member of the society, I believe, to take part in these training programs and have to have a reservation, but they cover everything from the history of psychical research to methodologies to current findings and theories. They bring people in from all vast disciplines, not just based in one particular theory. It's very good. The Rhine Research Center out in Durham, North Carolina, they have a summer study program. They also host certain guest speakers that come in. Some are more rigorous than others. I think their quality of standards has slacked over the years. And then, of course, the BIAL Foundation, B-I-A-L. They're based in Porto, Portugal. They are probably the largest funder of parapsych research, but they're also a pharmaceutical company. So they're actually trying to meld physiology, the brain sciences, and parapsych. And so they actually have nice-sized grants. I'm actually working on a grant from them right now in some research. And every, 2-3 years, they host a major conference in Portugal. And that's when you have incredibly heavy hitters, people from Harvard, from Oxford, people talking about brain sciences and stuff. If you want to talk about electromagnetic fields, this stuff will blow you away of the kind of level that they're at. That doesn't mean it all has the same level of validity, but, I mean, they're trying to bring a very strong, rigorous focus to it. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there are those kind of conferences, but they're few and far between, and they tend to be places that are kind of remote. I mean, you can't just go to them at all, which makes it even more important that when people seek out information on these things, they go to credible sources, they get reliable books or tapes or other kinds of information, and they read as much as they can from all perspectives. Don't just read what believers say. Read what skeptics say. Read what even debunkers say. Everyone has a little grain of probably truth, certainly of merit, and I think it prepares people better from a critical thinking stance to have all these perspectives in their toolbox. Because if you don't, like you guys were saying, if you have your own pet theory and that's it, well then every problem looks like a screw, and the only tool you have is a screwdriver to address it.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always work. You need different perspectives to stay sharp, to get at the facts, to do quality research, and to get to really have an understanding of what's going on in a given case and across these phenomena in general.
I think that's that pretty much nails it, yeah.
And I'm very excited. I'll be seeing Sally Rhinefeather in October. So,
oh, yeah, we're going to be seeing her at NewerCon. Yeah,
yeah, we'll be talking to her at the Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Is she going to be in Chicago?
I thought it says on the website.
I can't keep track of this stuff anymore.
So we'll see her in Chicago the weekend.
That's because we have one every other weekend.
Yeah, we're on the road.
We're somewhere every other weekend, yes. But so I'll be talking to her, and I'm going to pose her the same question.
No.
So, fantastic.
Dr. Horan, what do you have going on in the future? What plans do you have in your work? Obviously, we don't need to get on with the stuff you've done. We've just been through that. But what do you have coming up in the future?
Well, I wish I could give you details, but I'm working on a new documentary project related to the paranormal. And I can't say anything yet, but if it all works out the way it's planned, and as we just learned earlier, that doesn't always happen, it should be very cool. I'll give you guys notice when I have the details and I can talk about it.
Please, yeah. Let's
do that. Because we get to see you on certain things, in these documentaries or benefit from your knowledge in some of these. But definitely, we want to, keep doing it. Keep working on these documentaries and getting them out there because we want to
just the general work. This paper you sent over, Dr. Horan,
well, this thing's
was great. It was a great read. It was a fun read. I mean, it was a fun read. It really was a fun read. I mean, I don't know if that's the term people are looking for. Of course it was an informative read. Of course it was an enlightening read, but I enjoyed reading it, too.
Because I only got to peruse it because I didn't even have it in my packet of show notes. I only got to peruse it, Dr. Horan, but one of the things that I'm surprised at is how many things you guys actually looked at and measured or thought of. And that's just crazy because I think that one of the things that we could learn from this is what we need to be paying attention to.
Exactly.
When we go out and about.
Definitely.
Yes, I completely agree. And that's, again, we were testing things that we thought were important based on past research, our own and others. But we're also on a fishing expedition. What other things are we not taking into account now that could be important? So we broaden our horizons. We go on fishing expeditions and see if we catch anything. And if we do, if we think we've found an unusual effect or some new finding, well, then on the next study we do, we try to see if we get that same result. And if we do, we refine our theories. If we don't, well, we refine them even more. It's always important. I'm sorry?
I was just gonna sort of close and go to that. weren't finished at the time. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I was gonna say your textbooks, if you go to Amazon.com and under the author search for James Horan, Houran.
Yeah.
Google Integrated Knowledge Systems. Mm-hmm. Integrated Knowledge Systems is the website. It's being redone now, but this is, end of June?
July.
End of July. Sorry, I'm a month off. This is the end of July.
It'll probably be the end of August when you'll see all the new content up.
Right. Cool. So up in, well, that's the time, too, because September, October are the time for us. Mm. So so September,
exactly.
October 2007 and on, will the new website for Integrated Knowledge Systems will be online.
Yeah.
Thank you so
Thank
extremely
you,
much,
Dr. Horan. We really appreciate
it. My pleasure, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for visiting us again.
Take care, and I look forward to next time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hang on the line for 1 second. Don't leave us just yet, all right?
You got it.
All right.
Thank you.
Guys, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up, Rich Anders is going to be joining us. I know we mentioned we'd be talking about metaphysics, but I think you're going to be surprised. We're going to talk about something a little bit different than that, I think.
Uh-oh.
So just stay tuned. We'll be right
back. It's on my show notes.
They're right there.
Oh, okay. Good, good. I'm happy.
It's like dealing with a 2-year-old.
I know.
We'll be right back.
I want things to go as planned.